everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of the Jolt Maver podcast. My name is Josh Bernardi. I'm your host for today. So we are the Mixed Augmented and Virtual Reality Special Interest Group within the Japan Association for Language Teaching. This is episode 7, like I said, so we have a back catalog of episodes. Our podcast is available on almost every podcast app now, so if you haven't listened, please go back and listen to some old episodes. We have interviews with experts in this field. We have officers and members talking about their own research. So yeah, please give it a listen. Okay, today we have an interview with Adam Stone. He's one of our officers. He's going to be talking about his experience developing apps and giving some advice to other people who want to try to develop their own software in this field. But before that, some news for our SIG. If you're listening to this in early 2022, one of our officers, Merasa Eliza Day, is going to be giving one of the plenary speeches at PANSIG 2022 coming up in a few months, so please check that out. She's going to be talking about technology-enhanced language learning and the future of this kind of technology we're all interested in this field. So yeah, please join us at PANSIG so you can listen to her speech. Today's music for the episode is a cover of the song Loro by Pinback, recorded by myself. All right, let's get to the interview with Adam. All right, I'm here with Adam Stone. Adam Stone is a full-time lecturer at Kyushu Sangyo University. He's one of our Maver SIG officers. He's from New Zealand originally. He has a master's in applied linguistics, also a bachelor's in fine arts. He very kindly agreed to talk to us today about his app development. So we'll get to the interview here. So Adam, yeah, tell us about some of the apps you're developing or you have developed in the past, please.
Hey, Josh. Thank you for having me. Let's see. I have 5 main apps that I'm working on. They are KSU Treasure, Crazy Calculator, Vocab Viddies, Flipgrid Organizer, and Mastery Sentences. Let me break those down for you a little bit, shall I?
Yeah, please do.
KSU Treasure, they're in the order of me developing them, their creation. Let's see, the first one, KSU Treasure is an AR app, augmented reality app, that serves as a campus guide for prospective and enrolled students at Kyushu Sangyo University. The content is telling the students, or the users, about the facilities and services available to them at Kyushu Sangyo University. So it serves that purpose, a promotional service, if you will, for the university, but also as support, basically, for the students. It's kind of, it's gamified, it's a learning game. There are three posters, a poster at each of the three locations at the university, the library, the English department, and the career center. These posters will unlock a augmented reality game. There's a bunch of diamonds or jewels that spin around. The question is presented to you by a pirate. It's all in a pirate kind of a theme, and you've got to answer correctly. Incorrect answers will be a bit of a penalty. Correctly answered will give you points. It has a connected leaderboard, and it is bilingual in English and Japanese. At this stage, we have plans one day, if we were to develop this further, to add more locations and perhaps even more languages. Yeah, that was a lot of fun to build, to develop. The next one I made, I think, was... The next one I made was Vocabulary Videos, I think. Vocab Viddies was the working title. It underwent a few name changes, but I think that's still my favorite, to be honest, Vocab Viddies. It's fairly descriptive. It's a vocabulary video app. There are a whole bunch of very short videos, 1 or 2 second long videos, uploaded to the app. The students or the user presses a word and the video of that word will be played. So it just basically shows them what the word how the word is said. So focuses in on the pronunciation of the words to practice for listening tests, essentially. Let's see, the first iteration. Well, the background of this was I had YouTube videos of the vocabulary lists, the prescribed lists for the students at KSU, uploaded to YouTube. It didn't get very many hits because, well, there were 40 words. I did all 40 words for each list, but now we're only focusing on 15 words. So the videos were very long, so they'd have to scrub through to find the words that they found difficult. Thought there has to be a better way. So this app just plays individual words on demand, whichever word you want to hear said. These words, there are different video packs that can be downloaded to the app. As many as you like, of six different speakers saying the words for each of the two semesters for grade one and two for the standard English learning course. So there's a basic video play facility in the app. There is also a couple of games, a couple of functions. One is like I call it a karuta game, the Japanese karuta, where it's a word game. Hints will be spoken, and you gotta like snap, hit the right word quickly to win. So it's a time-based game. Videos of each word are said, very simple. Videos are played, and you gotta touch the correct button to get points. So if you touch the wrong word, then you get a bit of a time penalty. And that has a shared leaderboard too, so the students or users can compare their scores with other students to get a bit of healthy competition amongst them. Vocab viddies. Oh, one more other thing it can do is a recent development. I've been working on this for a couple of years by myself. Vocab viddies also has a word test in it, where the kids are tested on the words that they've been playing with in the Karuta game. Yeah, more about that later. I'll just introduce the five different apps. We've got KSU Treasure, developed by me and my colleague Sam Taylor. Vocab Videos by me and a colleague, Andrew Gallacher. And another app called Crazy Calculator. This is just a fun little app. You type in secret codes and funny things will happen. Funny pictures and whatnot. That was just for play. There's nothing academic about it. But the purpose of this was to see if I could monetize it, see if I can just jump through all the hoops and get 100 yen into my bank account. I still haven't got that 100 yen to my bank account yet. I think two of my friends bought the app for me, so it was very nice of them. Shout outs to those who bought the app and left reviews. These three apps are all available on the App Store for smartphones. The Treasure Hunt and the Vocab Videos is also available on Google Play for Android devices. Two other apps I have developed or am developing. Flipgrid Organizer. This is an app that runs on a MacBook, Mac computer, and this uses downloaded captions from the Flipgrid app and compares them to a master caption and grades them. So the idea of this is it's a pronunciation test. I will upload my own video of me saying the 15 words perfectly as best as I can, and the students they watch my video and practice saying these words. They upload their own videos, and all these captions are downloaded and compared, and if they say them as well as I do, that their captions are the same as mine, they'll get full score. So the Flipgrid Organizer grades their output, their pronunciation output, and so it kind of goes hand in hand with Vocab Viddies, where they learn how to say the words correctly. Pronunciation app, right? Vocab Viddies and Flipgrid Organizer kind of go hand in hand, and I've been using both of these for a year or so now. The other app that I'm currently deep in developing is called working title, Mastery Sentences or Mastery Quizzes or something like that. The concept of a mastery sentence is simply a sentence that shows the meaning of the word, the keyword. So if the keyword was banana, I like bananas is not a mastery sentence. If you were to hide the word bananas, I like space, you wouldn't be able to guess the word very easily. So if you were presented with a sentence that said, monkeys like to eat yellow fruit called space, nunny nunny, then you'd probably guess banana correctly. Right, so encouraging the kids to use this mastery sentence technique, right? And this is still in development. It's not released yet. But the idea behind this came from, since Corona, we've been using the Moodle a lot. And I've been getting the kids to upload their mastery sentences for half the points and to guess other students' keywords from their mastery sentences for the other 50% of those points. So I thought I could gamify this a little bit with a bit of a shared leaderboard and a shared database. So those are the five main apps that I've been developing or have developed over the past 4 or 5 years, I suppose.
Wow, you've been busy. Yeah, thank you for explaining all that. You know, I think we have listeners and members of the SIG who would be interested in, you know, developing their own apps. So we'll talk a little bit about your own process in getting into this. What made you want to start developing your own apps?
Well, I've always been interested in computers and technology and robots. You know, obviously pop culture had a lot to play in that, you know, Max Headroom and Transformers or what have you, 2001 Space Odyssey. My first computer was a VZ300 back in, 1980s sometime. Learned how to program in BASIC on my VZ300. So it was Australian microcomputer similar to the Commodore 64. And then at art school, I took a paper in some kind of computer science. I learned how to program in Pascal. I get pretty excited by it, so I thought I'd like to pursue this a little bit. Unfortunately, I had to take a math paper, which was just a little bit beyond me. I like math, but I'm not very good at it. So I had a bit of a dead end there. And while, you know, always playing around with computers, I was a Windows kind of guy, PC kind of guy for a very long time. And so having a Windows machine, that kept me busy enough reinstalling software and diagnosing and whatnot. And I sort of went through a Windows computer every couple of years. And then I finally bought a Mac, and I've still got that Mac. Those things are solid. So talking to my brother-in-law, I think my brother-in-law, Grant, he suggested I look into learning Python or Ruby. So I learned Python, taught myself how to program in Python, and that was a load of fun. Opened up some doors. I got myself a Raspberry Pi, made a little robot that crawled around on the floor. That settled over to the other side, still playing with Python from time to time. And then, jeepers, when was that? That must have been 10 years ago. And I guess four or five years ago, I went to a Jolt conference, I think, somewhere with my colleague Sam Taylor, and we were looking to do some research projects together. We joined the Mavra SIG with Jolt, and we visited the desk, and that's where we first met Ewan Bonner and Aaron Frazier. And
right.
They had been working on a campus guide app with augmented reality, and we found that very inspiring. I spoke to Ewan Bonner and I asked him something like, you know, how did you learn to program apps? You know, what's your background? And he said he was self-learned or self-taught, taught himself how to program. And I just found that the most inspiring thing that was possible. If he could do it, then why couldn't I teach myself how to make apps? And so occasionally, you know, sort of, you know, ask him a few questions and get a lot of great insights from you and Bonner. Having done that means, so Sam and Taylor, from that inspiration, we went on to make the KSU Treasure Hunt app. And using Unity and C# and a plugin called Vuforia. And I found myself being able, it was very, very encouraging to get results back pretty quickly. Like I could I could install this to my iPhone, and I had my own app, and I found myself getting really deep into this program and really just enjoying it and loving it, problem solving and learning. My learning curve was just so steep in those days. It still is, to be honest. So it's what I really love doing. To be honest with you, wouldn't it be great to make some money out of it? You'll notice money is the last thing I mentioned here. I'd love to be able to make money out of doing this because I really enjoy doing it. It's not the main motivation, but hey, that'd be great. Make some money, get rich from making apps. You hear these stories about these 15-year-old kids who make their own little Flappy Birds or something, and they're overnight success millionaires. I want a piece of that. So yeah, good question. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess that is the dream. Yeah. Well, you know, I think this is kind of a daunting prospect for a lot of people developing their own apps. So I guess we'd like to hear a little bit from you about some of the challenges you faced as you've developed these apps and any advice you'd give to people who would want to develop some software like this.
Yeah, good question. Well, let's see. The first challenge, I do say challenge, not problem. Challenge is something one can rise to. I do like a challenge. I like to think most people like a challenge. If you don't like a challenge, this is not the business for you. You've got to be able to get your teeth stuck into this. If it's scary or you've got any aversion to this, then you probably best keep away. Don't be programming reluctantly. Got to go through that code over and over again. So the first challenge to develop an app or a project is basically define it. You start with pen and paper if that's what you like. My colleague and I, Sam Taylor and I, our first project together was the KSU Treasure Hunt, an AR app, which we developed using Unity with the plugin Vuforia and programming language C Sharp. My first step with that was to see how far I could get with for free, just using the free version of the plugin, seeing what it could do, triggerless and triggered AR, what I could attach to those triggers, pictures or videos or 3D models, what we could do with these sorts of things. So once we saw the possibilities of AR, we decided that we wanted to do something with AR and a smartphone app. That much we knew. So from there, we had to do a little research on what we could do. And so the next step after that was to start putting a bit of a story together, storyboard, if you will, paper prototype. We researched on back in those days on how to work together as a team using, I think they call it the agile philosophy, agile approach, where you take on roles of project manager and app developer, and you give yourself sprints or time periods to accomplish things, get that minimal viable product out as soon as possible. And we sketched up some paper prototypes, like a whole, like a cartoon comic strip of each different screen, how it would change. But in the end, to be honest with you, I prefer using Keynote. On the Mac, it's really easy for me to use. I can throw the geometric shapes and the texts and the colors around the screen. I can throw some little comments underneath it. And you can collaborate in real time with your colleagues too. And you don't have a pile of paper prototypes sort of clogging up the bookshelf there. So I recommend Keynote, or your favorite layout program. It's got to be something really easy to use, because you need to focus on how to using Unity or the actual programming software. Sometimes, I'm getting pretty familiar with Unity now that I can almost sketch stuff out within Unity itself, you know.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes I find Keynote very good for just laying out, sort of defining the problems. So that'll be your first challenge you'll find, is what are you making, defining that, and then going about putting together a prototype. Once you've got that, then you can start breaking down each of those problems or challenges into smaller challenges, a bit more achievable. So that leads you on to the next challenge, I guess, would be the resources and how to achieve these different challenges. Like I mentioned, my first computer, VZ300, back in the 1980s or so, all I had was a kind of a thin dictionary and shaped instruction manual with basic commands and their definitions, how to use them, the syntax. And that's all I had. There was very, very little internet, if any. Definitely no Google in those days. All I had was that little instruction book, but I pored over that thing like a Bible. And, you know, like I say, you've got to get your teeth into it. You can't. This stuff kept me awake at night, just programming in my sleep. So, but now that challenge is sort of replaced with, instead of the new challenges now, is how so many resources, how to find what you want, how to Google something isn't as easy as it sounds. There are Facebook groups, there's Stack Exchange, and if you're going to join a Facebook group or even Stack Exchange, and you just go straight to them and ask them a question, how do I do this? If you haven't Googled it, it shows. They will tell you quickly, just Google it. You know, so the first step is Google it. but you have to learn how to Google stuff. and there's no easy way to learn that, but that's kind of ends up surfing the internet, doesn't it? You've got to stay on target. I can do this too. No, that's not what I'm doing. Do this over here. So yeah, resources are out there. Let's see. When I first started picking up Unity, I watched a bunch of YouTube tutorial videos. And while there are some very good ones, there is a lot of not so great ones, or ones in different languages, or poorly recorded audio, or very thick accents that it's hard to understand what they're saying, or perhaps even dated videos that tutorials that don't even apply to the current Unity anymore. However, they were very useful. Udemy, they offer these online courses for free to cheap to expensive. I downloaded a couple of them. I downloaded one that was I learned so much from. I didn't finish the course, but because by the time I'd sort of gotten halfway through it, I'd learned what I needed. The candle had been lit. I'd learned what I needed to sort of set me on path. And I guess at that stage, I had learned how to Google something properly. The Unity documents as well. There's a wealth of information in there if you can understand what they're doing there. So yeah, a challenge would be resources and finding out how to do something. I mean, even copying and pasting code is a great start. The next phase would be to learn what you've actually copied and pasted. Let's see your your production zone, your area, your space and time, as it were. Space is very important. You need a nice, comfortable place with your computer. You need a good computer. You need good gear. My favorite place to program, to be honest, is my cubicle at work. It's like a meter and a half square. And it's quiet in there. There's no interruptions whatsoever. Since I've been doing online lessons, working at home, not so easy juggling that with the family life, getting the kids ready for school, and just the screaming and the sounds in the background, family time. You know, it's. I've got my own office here, although it's a bit cold. So I really like I'm sitting right here now at the living room table here. So yeah, find a good space and a good time. I'm a bit of an early riser. I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I come down, make myself a stiff coffee, and my eyes are still waking up. So I'll just pore over my old code and, you know, delete out those unnecessary comments. And as my brain starts to get into gear, I find the quietness of 5:30 in the morning before everyone's woken up just the best time really for me to code. Then by the time my girls have woken up and they're having breakfast, my brain is in full programming mode, and it's hard to sort of get anything else done with the day. The afternoon, I get a bit sleepy. It's not the best time. I want to go outside and play in the garden. So space and time, and also working with people, can be a challenge too. It can be very helpful if you've got a good team, and if you've got the same vision. Working with people, you have to be very careful. If you've got to choose the right people, working with Sam Taylor, In the early days, I mean, having someone believe in me, he really believed in me, which was just so motivating. He took on the role of project manager, and I really wanted to share with him, and I did, as much as I could about how the programming was working and things like that. But it was hard because he had other things that needed to be taken care of. We expanded our team at one stage to another guy who was going to be our art manager, I think was his kind of role, graphics and things like that. And I think three people, again, it's a new dynamic. It's not simply three, like, plus one extra person. It's kind of three-piece people squared. It becomes, I don't know how big businesses do it, to be honest. Working with people, I guess the biggest thing is you've got to keep the vision the same. You know, you've got to be all on the same page, which means meetings, but meetings can take up so much time. You know, working with people, you've got to be careful with that. But working, the other person that I work with a lot, I've mentioned it to her, she probably doesn't realize it as much as I want her to, is my wife. She knows nothing really, well, she knows more than she thinks she does, about Unity, but I often just sort of spitball ideas with her. This is what I've been doing. And just by the sheer saying it out loud to her, this is the problem, this is how I've done it, you know. Just by voicing out the problem out loud, by the time I've told her what the problem is and my unfinished solution is, I've figured out the answer. And also just these fresh eyes of that haven't been staring at the screen, you know, all day long can be so helpful. Just a new perspective. So you definitely need someone at the very minimum just to be able to sort of talk to about what you're working on. And of course this changes with different people. Some people are absolute hermits. Introverts, and they don't want to talk to anybody. For me, I've found it very helpful to have at least somebody that's not a cat that I can talk to. I've tried talking to the cat. I haven't found it as effective though. Yeah, I guess one other final bit of advice I would give would be before you try to create a solution to a problem, see if it's already out there. And this goes right back to, oh, I'm going to make a whole new app that does this and that. Well, go and see if that app is already there. You don't need to make a new Facebook if there's already a Facebook, you know. That's step one. But also, like, oh, and I've actually had this. What was it? It was some kind of sorting algorithm, I think. Something like that. Oh, wow, look. I figured out how to sort this array using this programming thing, and I thought I'd share it with a Facebook group, and then I was quickly schooled, dude, that algorithm is, you know, there's already a function there, you can just click dot sort after your blah, blah, blah. It's like, ah, oh, that was a bit stupid. Yeah, but I mean, I learned a lot in the process, so it wasn't a complete waste of time. Yeah, I guess that's the main advice I would have offhand. Define the problems, define your problems, sort out your resources, space and time and people, optimize, and don't reinvent the wheel.
All right, thank you so much. Yeah, that's a lot of great practical advice. I think anybody working in this sphere could really take advantage of, yeah, what you've taught us today. That's very helpful. Thank you, Adam. So just a couple more questions for you. I guess we want to talk about practical applications as well. So can you talk to us about how you've tried to use your own apps in your English classes and in the classroom, and how have students reacted to using those apps?
Yes, I have tried using some of my apps in the classroom. I've been using the VocabViz app, for at least a year. At least a year. I first shared a test flight of vocab videos with a couple of kids in the class, and watching them use it, oh man, that was so cool. And watching them use it in ways that I hadn't expected them to use it, like sort of hiding the screen and testing their friends just before a word test. That was very encouraging. Using vocab vidies in the classroom properly for the past year, using the Karuta game and the word test game. Like I said, since we did online lessons, we've been back in the classroom, I guess, the majority of 2021. However, not relying on the face-to-faces, I'm paperless now. We use a Moodle system. And so I have the kids upload screenshots of their vocab vidies Karuta scores and screenshots of their word test scores. The word test tests them on their listening. The first five words are videos, saying five words, write the Japanese. The next five problems are read the Japanese, type in the English, check your spelling. And the final five questions are missing words, sentences, and multi-choice, so choosing the right word for the right sentence. And these are both time-stamped, start time, time taken, are all displayed in the screenshot. So, I mean, it is possible for them to, doctor a JPEG. I'm always thinking about how the students cheat, because if they can, they will certainly try. So I think it's pretty hard to do, because the submission for the Moodle, submit this screenshot now between the hours of this time and this time, right? So they would have to work pretty hard on their smartphones to doctor up a JPEG screenshot and submit it in on time. Which list we're going to test, that is also chosen moments before the actual test. I'm sorry, these are the word tests that I did in the class.
Oh, okay.
Because this was just a trial, weekly word tests and Karuta games, they were just 100% if you did them. So I'm just getting them to use it. But at the end of the semester, I did actual word tests in the classroom using that technique. Like the Moodle is open now, and now it's closed. I hope you've got your screenshots in on time. And actually using the scores from the word test for their grades. So if they'd been doing it each week, then they would know how to do the test. The app usage wouldn't be a problem, how to use the app. So that's vocab vidies. Vocab videos, I don't know how much more I should talk about the technical side of it. It had been sending, and the KSU Treasure Hunt also does this, every button click sends a little packet of information to a Google Doc, like a Google form, which is time-stamped and tells the name of the button and some other data, the device ID and things like this. The vocab vidies, it would also send data about their word test or the answers that they've chosen for the word test. And so I went back to look at the data that had been collected by the app, and I think I had 70,000 rows in a spreadsheet, which was just a little bit overwhelming to sort of deal with. The spreadsheet went very slowly trying to sort through all that data. So the new version, which is going to be released pretty soon, I've taught myself how to use PHP, and I've written a bit of an API for a PHP database. So this is just a little bit more clever. For example, if they're playing the Karuta game and they get a word wrong, it will tell the PHP database that this word was difficult, and so it will get a -1. If they get it right, it'll get a +1. And so by updating a database like that, I can quickly see, okay, this word is difficult for them, this word is easy for them. That was a big point of the Vocab Vidies app, was that it was not just a resource for the students to use in the classroom, but also a tool for researchers to use. They could get that data and sort of analyze it and look, oh, okay, these words are difficult, and They could see patterns emerge. You know, they're difficult for these reasons. I'm sure most English teachers in Japan have got a sense for the things that would be difficult for Japanese students, but not always so. Hopefully it would offer some insights. Vocavity's app, definitely been used in the classroom. It was just so encouraging seeing a classroom full of my students using my app at the same time. That was really cool, very inspiring. So that's Vocavities and KSU Treasure. Not so much in the classroom. It was a bit of a field trip. So I'd say go and do the KSU Treasure Hunt. Come back before the end of the class. Have fun. I don't want to say it's a class time filler kind of an activity because they were learning stuff. Sam Taylor also made a worksheet for it too. So, you know, to see if they actually learn stuff from the KSU Treasure Hunt app. Let's see, Flipgrid Organizer is something I have been using. Not in the classroom, they've been using the Flipgrid app in the classroom, or at least as their homework. I use the Flipgrid Organizer to sort of collate their data afterwards and use that for their grades. Yeah, that's how I have been using my apps in the classroom.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm sure it's a huge thrill to see students using something you've worked so hard on and seeing them enjoy it. So, yeah, I imagine it's all worth it when you see their faces and see them learning from it. So, just one more question for you, Adam. So, I guess let's talk about the future a little bit. Do you have any plans for apps you want to develop from here on out?
Yes. Well, let's see. Mastery Sentence app is currently in development. So, that will be on the stores, I hope, before this first semester would be great. Otherwise, at least this year, I want to get the students using that as soon as possible. The Vocavities app, well, I will be taking this with me wherever I go. I've got another year on my contract with Kyusandai. Wherever I go, I want to take this app with me. So the reason it uploads videos to the app is because videos are heavy. You can't pre-install these videos because it's just too many of them. You need some amazing compression, which would just compress the videos beyond recognition, I think. But also, you can add other courses and other word lists and videos to the app, make them available for download. So, yeah, that's I don't know if that's developing the app so much. But I have had this idea quite recently for vocab videos, is to make an AR mode or perhaps even a VR mode, using the idea of the Memory Palace. If you've ever heard of the Memory Palace,
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Kevin Trudeau, one of these memory experts, uses a technique where he imagines himself in a room, and each of the items he has to memorize, he places it in a position in one of these rooms. So he's using his spatial memory to memorize these items. So I thought that might be an interesting idea to push into VR mode and AR mode. It'd be obviously connected to the Vocavities app because there's that database. So they could quickly see, based on previous students' scores and things like that, and data that, these are words are difficult for other people. This is a word I should remember. And they could use their hands in VR, the controllers, to sort of place these objects around the 3D space. With an AR mode, it would be probably triggerless. might need a big space, but you could imagine placing these videos above their head or off to the side or clicking on the video to move it around in this virtual AR space. That's a little idea I've been playing with. I've got another couple of little projects on the side that I haven't touched for a while. One is currently called Bravitalica. Bravitalica. This is a... I've always liked the idea of the X-Wing video game. This is nothing academic at all. This is just for play. X-Wing kind of flying around in space, shooting each other, shoot 'em ups kind of a game. And I've been using the Photon PUN connector, whatever it is, plug-in for Unity. And I've actually managed to get it going between a couple of smartphones, maybe a kind of a Doom kind of a function. I don't know, that's just for playing. I'd like to definitely be making some apps for VR. I think it's a brave new world. The problem with VR is that not everybody has their own set. So it's a very small market at this stage. I think it's certainly burgeoning. I just do not like Google Cardboard. I find that just gives me motion sickness. So I've got a Quest 1, Oculus Quest 1, which is already out of date apparently. It's still fun though. I can still play around with it. And it's got the 6 degrees of movement in there, which is very nice. Another little app on the side is a recipe app that I'm working on with my wife. But again, that's sort of stalled a little bit at the moment. Those are all my future plans at the moment that I can think of.
Wow, okay. Well, so much diversity in what you're working on. That's amazing. So, yeah, thank you for taking the time today, Adam, answering all of our questions. So, listeners, yeah, if you can, we're available. Please patronize Adam's apps and keep a lookout for anything he develops in the future. And if you come and join the SIG or join us at some events, you might even be able to run into Adam and pick his brain about his app development process. So thank you for today, Adam. Really appreciate it. All right, that'll do it for episode 7 of the Jolt Maver podcast. Thank you for listening. Yeah, keep track of us online and on social media. You can find our website if you Google our SIG name or look for Realities in Learning. And yeah, we're on almost every social media platform, so follow us there. We hope to see you at PanSIG 2022. Let's support our officer, Meirasa, and her plenary speech, which is very exciting. All right, thank you, everybody.